Welcome to Grid Talk, a series of conversations with the leaders and innovators shaping the 21st century grid. Hosting the podcast is Marty Rosenberg, an award-winning energy journalist. The series is sponsored by the Department of Energy's Office of Electricity Advanced Grid Research Division. Now, here's Marty Rosenberg with Grid Talk.
Hi, and welcome to Grid Talk. Today, we're very pleased to have with us Dalia Patino-Echeverri, who's Associate Professor at the Nicholas Institute at Duke University. Hi, Dalia. How are you today?
Hi, Marty. Really happy to see you.
We're excited to get into your work, but before we do, why don't you give us an overview of what the Nicholas Institute is, what its objectives are?
Actually, I'm a professor at the Nicholas School of the Environment at Duke University. We have the same name, but we are different. In the Nicholas School, we have three divisions. One is the Environmental Science and Policy Division. Another one is the Earth and Climate Science. And the third one is the Marine Lab in Beaufort. And we do all kind of research related to the environment. We have a very large group of economists, ecologists, toxicologists, hydrologists, geologists, political scientists, very interdisciplinary, looking at all aspects of environmental protection.
So you're based in North Carolina, and we're going to be talking about some of your work with Duke Energy, specifically how we can be more reliant and deploy more solar and wind energy, which are intermittent resources, which pose risks and creates uncertainty for the market, which you're addressing directly. Tell us about your work on modeling. And to just set this up, currently solar represents about 9% of America's net summer capacity, or 4.5%, 4.7% of the annual generation in America. If we could boost that, which is everybody's goal, certainly solar is a leading new resource in energy production, it will become more valuable. So tell us about the reserves that are now required for solar and wind, and how you think we can fine-tune that and make progress on that front.
Thank you, Marty. Yes. Well, our work contribute to three big challenges that we see in electricity, in the electricity industry, and in operations of the power generation fleet that we have. And it all starts with what is the most critical function of an electric power system operator? It is to keep electricity generation and generation consumption, right, and consumption or demand or load in balance, in perfect balance at all times. And this delicate balancing act between generation and load requires very, very careful planning. So ahead of time, the system operators have to consider first the forecast of their electricity demand, and then they have to consider the forecast of all the electricity generation from wind and solar resources. And they also have to keep in mind the changing availability of the conventional resources, like coal-fired power plants, natural gas plants, nuclear plants, because their availability also changes with the fuel supply availability and with the weather. And keeping all these forecasts of demand, of wind and solar, and how much of the traditional conventional generation is available, the operators have to schedule the operation of the whole fleet. And this schedule is done so that it minimizes the expected cost of meeting demand, right? The expected cost of operating all the system assets, the generators and the storage devices, etc. So this process of balancing the forecast of the load and the estimates of the renewable production and the conventional resources schedules is a mathematical program that is solved in computers every day and many times a day as well, and sometimes many times within an hour. The solution of this mathematical program, what it does is it specifies what is the schedule of every single power plant and within the power plant, every single generating unit within the power plant. So it tells you when to start that power plant and that unit within the power plant and when to shut it down and how much of the capacity to keep as reserves.
So as we get to a more distributed grid, there are more endpoints. This gets increasingly complicated, does it not?
Absolutely. So right now I haven't mentioned anything about distributed, but there are a few things here. One is that the error in forecasting the load, how much people are going to consume, is exacerbated as people start installing new things that we haven't had collected data for. So, for example, as people electrify their homes and stop using or use less natural gas and more electricity, as they use less gasoline and more electricity to power their cars, and as they generate their own electricity. So now we have to forecast the net load. Is what is their charge, but after subtracting all the electricity that they can generate at their homes. That would be like behind the meter generation and other consumption. And then we also have community solar facilities, smaller facilities, and we need to integrate a forecast of how much they can produce into the system to keep demand and supply in balance. So what I was saying is that you have this plan that you are going to start plants at this hour and shut them down and produce a set megawatt number from each unit. But you know you are going to be wrong because if you follow exactly that plan, because whatever you accounted for as the forecast of demand or whatever you said is going to be the production of wind or solar energy is going to be wrong because we cannot precisely or perfectly forecast those things. So we keep reserves. We say we're going to keep the power plants at a point where if we need to increase capacity generation, we increase it. And if we need to decrease it, we decrease it. And that requirement for reserves, for this flexibility in the power plants, it grows with the penetration of solar and wind. You need more and more of these reserves to react to this greater forecast error, to this greater uncertainty that you have on how much is going to be.
So as all things being equal, as we go to intermittent renewable resources increasingly, there's more uncertainty, and if we do nothing else, there'll be a need for even more reserves, will there not?
Right. So we will need...
So you're addressing that. Tell us how you're addressing that.
Yes. So we're going to need to have resources that can provide reserves, right? So resources that are flexible enough to ramp up their electricity production or ramp down their electricity production as needed, as you go on and find that you need to react to sudden decreases in solar production or sudden increases in solar production or wind. So we say, well, rather than pursuing a target of reserves, like saying, I need to have these reserves for the next hour because I think my error is going to be X or Y, which is what is done today. We say, this is my forecast of load. This is my forecast of solar. This is my forecast of wind. And I plan for that and I keep some reserves in case I'm wrong. We say, well, consider all the scenarios that are possible. Put probabilities into those scenarios. And then let your mathematical model decide when you need reserves and how much, varying with the uncertainty you have expressed in those scenarios, in what is possible. And those scenarios come from the weather, from the weather forecast. The weather forecast affects load, and it also affects the production from solar and wind resources. So we say, consider all possible weather futures for tomorrow, all the possible variables, you know, temperatures and humidity levels, solar radiation, wind speeds that we can have.
And when you say tomorrow,
literally tomorrow.
You mean literally tomorrow?
Yes.
So we're sitting here today, and under this model, we'd be looking at tomorrow, and every day you stay a day ahead.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. And we say, well, in some cases, we have to look at, let's look at the at all the possibilities for the weather tomorrow, but also the day after tomorrow and several days, because there are some plans we have to, for some plans we have to plan ahead, even or resources we have to plan ahead, maybe a week ahead. Like, for example, one system that we are looking at is, you mentioned I am in North Carolina, and we are looking at the Duke Energy Carolina's Duke Energy Progress system. It's a very interesting system because itself alone, it provides more than 7% of the solar generation of this country. It's very interesting. It has 6 gigawatts of solar capacity, which is about 7% of the solar installed capacity in the United States. And it's very interesting because it has pumped hydro storage. It has 2 gigawatts of pumped hydro storage. So this resource makes us, forces us to plan ahead 1 week ahead. Because another point we have is we have half of the system, half the capacity of the system is, no, actually not half the capacity, solar, is half of the generation from the system comes from nuclear power plants, which are not flexible. You know, you cannot start shutting down nuclear plants when there is a lot of solar and then say, oh, well, and I just start my nuclear plant later when it is at night. You start your nuclear power plant and you want to keep it online and a very high production level because that is what reduces the cost of electricity from this plant. So in this system, with a lot of solar, with a lot of electricity from nuclear, more than 50% of it, and with a very large pumped hydro storage system, we have to look the day before, but we also have to have a horizon of a whole week to plan what we're going to do with these power plants and storage resources so that we balance demand and supply in the best way. That means we don't have to shut down and start up coal and natural gas plants all the time because the startups are expensive. We have to burn more fuel than if we just keep them operating online. We also don't have to curtail or spill renewable energy. We don't have to waste it. We can use it all. We don't have to increase the generation of expensive resources like combustion turbines, natural gas combines, which burn a lot of natural gas per unit of electricity generated, because we are always looking at all the possibilities of the future and planning for all this uncertainty and keeping our system in the most flexible position to increase up and down in the most economical way.
So talk a little bit about what role computerization, artificial intelligence is playing. Are you on the horizon of new capabilities that were not operational 2, 5, 10 years ago in the industry?
Right. So what we are proposing is using a technique that is a stochastic optimization instead of deterministic optimization. So deterministic is I know all where the costs come and I am taking the best position given this cost. The stochastic says, I know things are uncertain and there are going to be surprises. So I am going to account for those possible surprises with the probabilities. And this is an approach that has been proposed for a long time, but it has been difficult to implement because you need a large computational resources to get answers in time to run your power system. Right. So when you see a storm coming, you need to decide what you're going to do with your power plants. But in less than an hour, you should have an answer so that you can notify all the operators of all the power plants that they need to start up or shut down or increase their production capacity, etc. And with artificial intelligence and with machine learning, we have found ways to run these models that are more sophisticated, more demanding of computational resources. We have found to simplify those requirements, and we have found ways to run them faster.
So, would you consider this a test bed, or is it actually being deployed and used on a regular basis now within the Duke system?
No, this is under development, and we want to have a pilot in the next year or 2 years. But we are proposing different ways to implement it. So one of them would be without changing anything of what is in current use, except by giving some inputs, some numbers into the systems that are currently in use. So we can run all our models in the background and ahead of time and get some input numbers that can be used in the system that we have available today, so that the integration and the deployment of these technologies is simpler and it can be done, you know, now. Now, there is a more in-depth implementation that would require more, more modifications of the systems that the utilities have today and the operators have today.
So talk for a second, because in your bio, it says that you have a particular emphasis in your work on managing the risks arising from uncertainties, influencing the outcomes of government actions. Tell us what the real world consequence of this work might be. Will it allow for faster deployment of renewables? Would it allow greater penetration of intermittent renewables like solar and wind? By whittling down the reserve margins, will that lower costs and mean all this is less expensive? Talk about some of the ramifications, the real world consequences.
The number one benefit that we see in our technology is that we're going to have the right level of reserves at each moment in time in a system.
So why is that a big deal for economics?
It is a big deal because if you have very high reserves, your system is very safe, but it's very expensive. And when you have an expensive system, you pose risk on people, the people who consume the electricity. And we have seen in this country how people make trade-offs between electricity consumption and things like paying for health care or food or education. So having a safe electricity system that is wasteful is not safe. It poses risk on other sides. So we don't want these reserves to be very high. We don't want them to be very low, because if we have low reserves and there is an unexpected event, and we can have outages, we can have expensive operations if we are lucky. Just expensive operations. We just start up whatever we can and waste fuel to match the load. But in the worst case, we may not have that luxury, and we may need to have outages and maybe even blackouts.
So you've clearly addressed the financial aspects of this. What about the other piece of this, which I said that solar today is about 4.5% of the generation in 2022. But in that year, it also represented 46% of the new generation capacity that was deployed. Will the kind of technology you're working on allow for even more ramp up of solar and wind?
Absolutely. We will be in a better position to integrate the variable renewable energy that we get from solar and from wind, because we will be considering all the possibilities and we'll be prepositioning our system in the best way to cope with the variability and uncertainty of these resources. And we will, and the thing is, we will not have to spill, you know, to curtail this energy as much, because we will be able to do what is needed on our storage systems and on our conventional natural gas power plants to make room for these resources. And as these resources are dispatched more often, they are never curtailed, for example, which is the ideal. If they are never curtailed, then their cost decreases, right? Their cost of the electricity they produce decreases, because their capital cost is spread out over more kilowatt hours that they produce. And this is a better deal for the investors. You know, you know you're going to be getting the most of your solar or wind investment. So this also reduces cost, and there is more deployment.
So let me ask you a philosophical question, if I can, which is, for years, the electric utility industry has been criticized. I heard Bill Gates and other people say it's one of the, as a the percentage of money the electric utility sector spends on R&D is among the smallest of any major sector in our economy. I think he jokingly said the pet food industry spends more on research as a percentage than utilities. Are organizations like EPRI working on the problems you're working on? Is Duke investing money in your work? Who's funding this work? What kind of federal resources do you have to apply to these important problems?
This work specifically is funded by ARPA-E, by the PERFORM program. It's a program that seeks to think about risk and uncertainty in operations in the electricity sector. But it looks at what is the risk that each type of technology brings to the power electric power market, and how can the compensation that we give to the investors be commensurate with that risk. So yes, ARPA-E is funding my project and other 9 projects along this way. ARPA-E, along with the just broadly the Department of Energy and EPRI, recently had a competition on who could forecast net load the best. And the goal of their competition was to invite people to think probabilistically about forecasts. So don't say your forecast is, you expect that this is going to be the value for tomorrow. Say, what are all the possible values that are plausible for tomorrow, and what are the probabilities? We participated in this along with many other teams.
I'd imagine you cleaned up. How'd you do?
They kept changing the date for the startup, and we were on vacation, so we didn't do as well as we wanted to. But we, in the last week, we did great, which is because when we could deploy our full technology, which showed us that yes, this is the way to go. That you have to look at the weather forecast and consider the uncertainty in your weather forecast, and then translate the uncertainty in your weather forecast in uncertainty on the forecast of load and the forecast of wind and solar. And with that, you can plan much better.
So, Dahlia, the last question I want to ask you is, as somebody on the front line of this battle that is ready to deploy some tests within the Duke system, how soon do you think this approach, if successful, will be out there making a difference for utilities around the nation and possibly around the world?
I expect not less than 2 years.
Really?
You know, 1 to 2 years. There are already important developments. I mean, the treatment of uncertainty, the embracement of uncertainty is increasing day by day, because that's what solar and wind are posing ahead in front of us, you know? And we are coming with better ways to characterize that uncertainty and hedge against it.
Okay. Is there any last word you want to talk about what it feels like to be doing this work?
It's very exciting. I have a great team of postdocs and PhD students from all continents, and it's remarkable to see that a lot of young people are interested in these challenges. If we care about the environment, we have to care about energy, and this is a great place to start. And the electricity industry and the government are investing more and more. So the numbers you were citing from Bill Gates, I would like to think that's from the past. We are now in a new moment where there is investment in all sorts of alternatives for solving this conundrum. Including software alternatives, like what we are doing, right? These technologies of how to plan and operate and analyze data and use new computational resources and automation for this.
Okay. Thank you, Dahlia.
Thank you, Marty. It was a pleasure.
We've been talking to Dahlia Patino Echeverri, associate professor and, I stand corrected, at the Duke Nicholas School of the Environment. Did I get that right?
Perfect.
Have a great day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Grid Talk, a production of the U.S. Department of Energy's Office of Electricity. We regularly convene conversations with thought leaders in the fast-changing electric sector in America and around the world. Please send us feedback or questions at gridtalk@nrel.gov. And we encourage you to give the podcast a rating or a review on your favorite podcast platform. For more information about this series, now in its fourth year, or to subscribe, please visit smartgrid.gov.
Thanks for listening to Grid Talk, presented by the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Electricity Advanced Grid Research Division. Subscribe through your favorite podcast provider or visit smartgrid.gov for more information.